Well, he took the world by storm with his book, Reading the Enemy's Mind, about remote viewing. Now he's back. Paul Smith, he's next on Coast to Coast AM. Paul Smith, degrees from BYU, the National Defense Intelligence College. He's a doctoral candidate in philosophy at the University of Texas at Austin. Of his 20 years as an Army intelligence officer, he spent 7 years as a remote viewer for the military Stargate remote viewing program, personally trained in remote viewing by the creators of remote viewing, the giants, Ingo Swann and Hal Puthoff, and he was the primary author of the program's RV training manual, as well as other well-known viewers such as Lynn Buchanan, David Morehouse, and Paul teaches remote viewing commercially. His book, as I mentioned, Reading the Enemy's Mind, was chosen as a book bonus feature and editor's choice by Reader's Digest, and he's going to talk with us also about military dowsing principles. Paul, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
I am doing wonderful.
You know, I'm sorry I missed you when you were here in Austin just a week or two ago.
That was the first time you have missed one of my trips, Paul.
Well, that's just, you know, it's real sad. I have been so busy lately, and, you know, I still have a copy of Work on the Light, which Bill Burns sent me, and I haven't got your signature in it yet.
Well, you've got to do that.
Yep.
What have you been up to?
Well, I've been doing dissertation stuff. That's one of the big things. Academia sometimes takes over from the remote viewing field. I have some commitments there, so that's one thing. But, of course, since the semester ended, I've been getting back in with the remote viewing and the dowsing things that I've been involved in as well. And it's very interesting. Interest in remote viewing is picking up. Interest in dowsing is as well. I kind of feel like maybe we have entered a new phase here where people are starting to wake up to the potential these things have. And so that's pretty darn exciting.
Well, now the people who are interested in it, though, are just everyday folks, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, everyday folks, people interested in it recently have run all the way from people with blue-collar jobs all the way up to an MD and PhD psychologist. And so it's kind of a spectrum of people in our society.
But how come the government is not interested in this anymore?
Well, of course, the government is a whole bunch of folks, and they've got their own opinions and views about things, and different people in power positions have different attitudes. And that really hasn't changed much from the days when the program was canceled, the military version of the program was canceled. If anything, remote viewing has gotten even harder for them to touch because, of course, there's a lot of notoriety out there about it, some of it good, some of it bad, and you get some colorful characters, shall we say, associated with it, and that makes it harder for the government to take seriously. I'm sure there's many other reasons, but that plays a big role, I think.
Paul, how do we know it didn't go undercover? Now, even though the good remote viewers, as we mentioned, you, Ingo, Hal, would have been, I think, called in on this. Is it possible still, though, the government went undercover and started fresh and new?
It's possible, and I always have to allow that. But of course, if it was undercover, we wouldn't be able to tell. You know, we wouldn't know if it was or not. Just judging from some of the decisions that have been made, I kind of think it's they don't have the program. you'd hope that they would have had more success in some of the things that they've undertaken. Although I have to say, things are looking up in the war on terror, the situation in Iraq. From very dark days in the past, things are looking positive, more positive. But that has nothing to do with remote viewing, as far as I can tell.
Let's talk about the remote viewing conference that you had been talking about on the program before. Mm-hmm. How did that go?
It was wonderful. I would say it's probably the best we ever had. And we've had some really good ones in the past. But this one, it went more smoothly. We had some venue problems. They scheduled a hip-hop party next to right next to our room when Jacques Vallée was speaking, and he was a real trooper.
He is a good guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's wonderful.
He's coming back on the program again.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. Is he going to talk about his new book?
I think so.
Oh, good. Yes. He gave me an advanced copy of it. I read it, and it's very intriguing. Very intriguing.
I like the fact that he's coming back into the public's eye.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after being really gone for so long, It's just great. I've had the utmost respect in him, Paul, as you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every time I think of the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind and that Frenchman who's highlighted in the movie, which is based on him, you know, it's just kind of neat to know that he's coming back. I mean, he's not, you know, he's not pushing the UFO end like he used to, but still his theories are pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, you know, he is a scientist, and that's the great thing about him. He's a scientist that has an open enough mind that he'll look into this stuff, but not so open that he'll believe just everything that comes along. He's a critical thinker. He looks at the evidence. He draws conclusions. He recognizes that there are some things that he can't gain ground truth on, but seem plausible in terms of what he already knows. And so that just gives him an air of credibility that he deserves and that the field desperately needs, frankly. So I'm glad to see him coming out of it, too.
Give me some of the highlights of your conference, because there might be some great material that came out of that.
I'll tell you, this was a pretty exciting one, too. It had the potential to be one of the most controversial ones we've ever done. Of course, we had Jacques Vallée, who was a great draw and just a legend to have him there. But we also took some risks with this one. You well know, and most of your listeners do too, about the rather checkered past of people like Ed Dames and Courtney Brown. And we in the planning committee were interested in having them come to the conference, but we had got a lot of friction from people who weren't willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. And they said, oh, it's going to be awful. You're going to have all kinds of problems. And that's just a really big mistake to get those kind of folks there, you know, all that. But it seemed like if we're going to have a big tent that the entire remote viewing community can come and kind of like the rendezvous up in Jackson Hole with the mountain men and the Indians, you know.
Exactly.
If we're going to have a place where everybody can lay down their weapons and get together and talk about remote viewing, we couldn't exclude people. Obviously, somebody who's really crazy, you know, it'd be a little tough. But we felt like it would be helpful to at least open the door to people with perhaps issues in their past. And Courtney Brown has really gone a long ways towards embracing the science of remote viewing and trying to really explore that and get into that. And you know, we want to reward good behavior. We want to get folks who are serious, and we want people to recognize that they can, you know, if they have some issues, they can still come on board, and as long as they're willing to try and play by the rules and stuff, we're happy to have them. But there's these great predictions of disaster because we're going to have Courtney and Ed Dames there, right? Well, I'm glad to say that maybe some people had hoped there was, because that would make for more exciting news, right? but everybody got along. It was great. And we had some very interesting discussions. We had some very interesting presentations and opportunities to pose challenging questions to some of the folks that were there. And it was great. Everybody raved about it. I didn't hear a single person complain about how the conference itself went down. They did complain about the hip hop party, but the hotel actually handled that quite well. The night manager went over and promised the party that if they turn off the music till we were done, he'd open the bar for free for 2 hours.
I love it.
Of course, that brought with it its own problems, but.
What do you see, Paul? We're gonna break down tonight into ESP, remote viewing, dowsing. What do you see as the most pressing remote viewing issue right now?
Oh, well, I'm in general terms,
yes.
In terms of the entire field, is acceptance. Getting people to pay attention and realize there really is something to this. We can keep talking to the choir all the time, the people already persuaded, the people already convinced, the ones who've done it and had successes, the ones who've seen successes done, although they may not have tried it themselves. We can talk to those guys until we're blue in the face. We won't get anywhere. The challenge is to get the broader population to pay attention, to get the science world to take us seriously, and that is really an uphill fight, I'll tell you right now. And yet we can't arrive until people are more willing to pay attention. Of course, then we run into problems on two sides. There's I say that the remote viewing is threatened by two entities. One is the skeptics, the ones who refuse to believe anything.
Right? True.
The other
but you
side,
can't convince them.
No. Well, not what we call skeptics. Now, a true skeptic, you can, because they're open-minded. They're willing to enter to examine the evidence. The late Marcello Truzzi, who was a great guy, he was willing to examine the evidence, and he didn't just put something down just because he didn't believe in it. But those are tough. They're tough, and they really actually hold the high ground these days. The skeptics have won over the science community. If you talk to a scientist who has never seen any evidence, they are convinced that there is no evidence. And they are convinced it isn't worth looking into because the skeptics have persuaded them that, of that. I have found that if you approach a scientist and say, look, I understand your mindset. Let me tell you what there is out here and show them some of the evidence. They may not necessarily jump on board the train, the ESP train, but they're at least willing to listen to you because most scientists are fair and open-minded, but they've just been sold this bill of goods because the skeptics have the ear of the media in great degree. But they aren't the only trouble. The other trouble are the ones who I call the true believers. The ones, you've got the skeptics who won't believe anything.
True.
You've got the true believers who will believe anything.
No matter what.
No matter what. They don't examine the evidence themselves in a different way. They'll accept any claim that anybody makes, and they'll go all excited about it. The problem is that they also are a threat in their own right because then they make remote viewing and other ESP-related things look silly. Right, look like it's just a circus or whatever.
Are these the same kind of people who think every creature is Bigfoot, every sighting is a definite extraterrestrial in a UFO, in a craft, people who just simply refuse to accept the possibility that it might not be?
There are people who have not developed their critical thinking skills, that don't winnow the evidence, to sort through the evidence to see what's credible and what isn't. They'll accept any evidence. They'll accept anybody's word. And that's just as dangerous as those who won't accept anybody's word.
Well, that's true. That's true. Well, let's take a look, first of all, about, is there a difference, in your opinion, between ESP and remote viewing?
Not really. ESP, I take as the larger category. ESP covers all kinds of extrasensory.
That's the umbrella.
Exactly. Remote viewing is a specialized version of it, is how I would say it. And there's been a lot of different words used. I mean, people talk about being psychic. More recently in the science world, they talk about anomalous cognition, which I understand the motivation for that, but I think that term doesn't help either. I actually didn't use ESP for a long time, and I finally, after trying to find a decent term, realized that ESP, for extrasensory perception, really is the best terminology to capture what it is that's going on. And so I've gone back to this older term and use it as a general description of the field.
All right, so let's break down ESP as the umbrella then over some of all of this. What are some of the tools available to help people, through ESP, get through life?
Well, the general one that everybody has at their disposal is just garden variety intuition, right? Now, intuition itself, actually, there's two modes to it. One mode is just your standard non-ESP kind of intuition, where we get bombarded with a lot of information. Every second, we're getting thousands of bits of information into through our sensory channels into our subconscious, which is where all of this stuff ends up, right? And then the subconscious passes on to the conscious awareness what it needs to know. Okay.
True.
And intuition, we get a lot of subconscious impressions that we aren't aware of, but are working cognitively in our subconscious and give us understanding and intuition, as we call it, about situations. And we don't know how we know something is true, but we know it is, and we act on that if we're smart, right? Then there's also ESP input that comes into that, and that informs the intuition as well. And so someone who's sensitive to both sides actually tends to be have a sort of early warning system or a judging faculty that other people who don't pay attention to it don't have.
Well, would you say, for example, Paul, that most successful chief executive officers have a better intuitive or ESP sense than others?
Absolutely. In fact, there's a book written, I don't know, 20 years ago, maybe, called Executive ESP, I think it was what it was called, where someone had done a study of executives. And many of them didn't believe in ESP, but they were sure hot on hunches and intuition sorts of things. And when their hunches and things were examined, there was no normal explanation for why they came to those conclusions. They just sort of knew. Even though they didn't believe in ESP, many of them, they were using it.
True. They just didn't know what it was, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting. Even without learning remote viewing or dowsing or any of these other skills, intuition is very valuable in helping us lead our lives better, not just financially in making money, but also in making good decisions about who to marry, where to live, what job to take, all these kinds of things. And people who learn to rely on it actually make progress. I think you had Laurie Nadel on here a while back.
Yeah.
And I've been reading her book. We've sort of traded books in a way. And it's really excellent. And it's helped me think more about intuition in a different way than I had. So I've come to recognize that as a more powerful tool than I did in the past, because, of course, I was so involved in the remote viewing angle.
Well, how can people use their ESP abilities to help combat some of these woes that are out there?
Well, for one thing, of course, for most people, it's just a matter of how they lead their own lives and how that affects themselves and the people in their immediate circle. You know, very few people are going to be a president of the United States or going to be head of a corporation or that where they affect thousands or millions of people. So, but even at that low level, it's crucial that people follow the right guidance in making their decisions and making right choices. If they do that, the more people that do that, the stronger the society is going to be, right? So not only do we want to help our own self-interest by becoming more intuitive or by more conscious ways bringing ESP into our lives, not just for our own purposes, not just to make or get rich or at least be able to make ends meet, but also because there's a spinoff in the greater society. The more intuitive people are, the more they pay attention to intuition, the better everybody is.
It would seem to me, too, Paul, that people need to react to their ESP abilities, and a lot of people don't see it. They may have it, but they may not react to it.
That's right. In fact, they often act against it. They say, oh, that can't possibly be right. I have this little feeling that I oughtn't to do that, but that's just imagination.
It's only a hunch.
Yes, exactly. Just a hunch, as if a hunch was nothing. But frankly, hunches oftentimes are very powerful.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think so, too. How do you distinguish the difference between someone who has incredible ESP abilities and uses it, and then the person who doesn't? That person with the abilities, I mean, does he basically outshine the other person all the time in every category?
No. Because there's lots of other factors in a physical world as we live in. There's a lot of other factors that happen as well. I mean, there are random events and such things that affect a person's well-being over which he or she may not have any control at all. I mean, if you happen to be in the bus that gets hit by the landslide, unless you paid attention to your ESP and didn't ride in the bus, right, then no matter what you do or how intuitive you are after that fact, the landslide is going to get you. Okay, that's, of course, an extreme and very dramatic example, but there are lots of smaller things that happen in life over which we have no control and for which ESP can't necessarily overcome, right? That was a strange sentence I just said, but you get the idea. And then there are other people who, even though they may not be as tuned into their intuition or into ESP, just because things break a certain way for them deterministically in the world, they may prosper in certain settings. But if you look overall, which is how you have to look at it, overall, someone who is in tune with their intuition and their ESP, or a combination of both, they overall are going to tend to prosper more than someone else who isn't.
Okay, we'll come right back with you, Paul. So we talk more about ESP. Later on, we'll talk about dowsing right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, this Saturday I'll be at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles, so come on out and say hello. There's a whole day of events planned. Just go to the coasttocoastam.com website and get all the information about the LA Conscious Life Expo. Paul, let's first talk about the financial world, because that has a lot to do with everybody right now. Can you use ESP to battle this problem we're all in right now?
It can be used on an individual basis. I think it would be a little tough to do it on a more
widespread
national level. Yeah. And, of course, that's where it mostly affects – well, I won't say that. I guess that's the wrong thing to say. That's where what's going to affect most readers anyway. How do they individually deal with whatever problems may come our way financially? And stated that way, yes, you can use it. You asked me the question a while back, what tools does ESP present? I forget exactly how you phrase the question, but what does it give us in order dealing with our lives? And I talked about intuition, and of course that helps, whether you ought to buy something, whether you ought to invest in something, that sort of thing. And I'll go to the little more refined end of this thing, the more skill-intensive approach, and that's using remote viewing. You can use remote viewing. Now, the first thing that remote viewing does, if for those who have taken the time and resources, which can be kind of demanding, to master remote viewing, it has a spin-off in that it actually aids your intuition as well.
Mm-hmm.
You find yourself more intuitive if you hone your remote viewing skills. So that's good. That's a plus thing. But remote viewing itself, used in certain ways, can actually help you make financial decisions. And make them more successful than you would normally than flipping a coin or with some information you might get from the market through studies and research and things. In fact, I've participated in a number of these little projects where average success, at least my average success, was about 69-70%.
That's huge.
Making the correct decision. Yeah, when you figure that if you're just going to make a guess, it's 50%. And if you can come up with a running average of about 70%, that gives you a significant edge when you're making some kinds of financial decisions. And so that is in a particular mode called associative remote viewing. It's where you take remote viewing and then you apply it in a certain way to help you make those kind of decisions. There's some steps to it. It's a little bit complicated. But if you don't follow the steps properly, you end up not having that kind of success.
Some people say, though, you can't really use this for monetary gain. Is that true?
No. that's interesting. There is this kind of false
group
belief that's been around for like millennia, where the thought is that...
It's a bad thing.
Yes. Well, not only is it a bad thing, it doesn't work, for financial things. It's the idea is that ESP somehow is this gift from... I don't know where. Folks who believe in God may believe it comes from God. Other people think it's like a gift from the fates or whatever. And it can only be used in altruistic ways, or it goes away or it ceases to function. You lose the gift, right? Well, there's plenty of evidence that that's not the case. I've participated in a number of cases where we use ESP in the form of remote viewing or whatever for financial gain, and it worked. We did actually succeed in making money in various ways. So the question would come up, well, okay, if you use ESP in the stock market to make money and that's either wrong or for some reason the universe precludes you from doing that, then why is that different than making money teaching ESP or researching ESP? You make money doing that as well, and that works.
True.
Although that's not quite exactly the same thing because you're not employing the skill. But in fact, the evidence shows that you can make money. Now, it's interesting. One of the early uses of ARV to make money was when Russell Targ and Keith Harari worked an ARV project. And we probably want to go and explain ARV in a little bit because I've done it before on your show, but I'm sure there's many people who don't know what it is.
Right.
But I'll just tell this quick story. They got involved in a silver futures prediction, and they made a lot of money. And then what happened is they started not making a lot of money because they had their first run, and they made, according to Russell, it was $120,000 total profit, and they split that with their investor. And then everybody started seeing money, dollar signs in their eyes, saying, wow, we did that well this way.
They got greedy.
They did get greedy, and bang, they had a couple of downturns where they did not succeed, and they lost a good chunk of money, right? So, and then people got discouraged, and they quit, right? Which often happens. You get discouraged, you quit, and if you kept on, you might have been more successful. But the greed gets in the way. And whether or not it has anything to do with fate, I don't know. It's certainly explainable just psychologically. When I do an associative remote viewing project in which I'm the viewer, I tell the people who are running it, I say, I do not want to know how much money you're laying on it. I don't know who you're, what you're betting on, right? Because it could be sports betting, or it could be betting on a stock, whether it's going to go up or down or whatever, right? So I say, I don't want to know anything about that. Because as I've discovered that when I know what's at stake, it's like you get up on stage and you suddenly get stage fright, even though you knew the part. You choke up, right? You know what's at stake, and you think, oh, no, what if I get it wrong? And at that point, you really do lose your ESP gift, if you will. It's not because you lose the capability to do it. It's because your consciousness gets in the way, and the emotions get into the picture, and it messes the whole system up. You choke, right?
That's true.
So I have found I had best success when all I was doing, the thing I was going for, was the reward that all remote viewers want, feedback, right? They want to see how well they did. And that, as long as that was the only thing in the picture, then I had more successes than I had failures. Once the money entered into the picture and I was aware of what it was, it got me in trouble.
Well, yeah, Glynis McCants, our numerologist, comes on and says, put an 8 in your wallet or keep it in your purse and you'll get some unfounded riches. But when you become greedy, that's when you lose it all.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's interesting. I have no idea how numerology works. I don't make any claims about it, but it wouldn't surprise me if there's an ESP element to that. You know, you have the thing in your pocket that's the attractor or whatever it is described as being, and that puts your subconscious to work. And it guides you, perhaps, to where you acquire that. But then if you get greedy, of course, then it shuts that down. So I can see how that works, at least from my way of interpreting how it might. You know.
Let's talk about ARV, since you brought it up. Yeah. Tell us what it means.
Well, remote viewing itself, of course, is a skill that we can develop using this underlying faculty that all of us have for ESP. A skill that helps us to exploit that. Where you can perceive or describe a target, a person, place, thing, event, whatever, that is separated from you, the viewer, by distance, shielding, or time. In other words, it could be on the other side of the planet, it could be at a different time in the past or the future, or it could be on the other side of the wall, but you can't see it because the wall's in the way, right? So that's what remote viewing in general does. It has there's more to remote viewing than just that, because you have to allow for mental noise, which messes up ESP all the time. There's all kinds of stuff. I won't go into that at the moment. But what ARV does is it takes that skill, that ability, and then it then tries to sidestep some of the problems we might have employing it directly. Now, what I mean by that is, for example, we'll use a stock market here as an example. Let's say, pick a stock. What's your favorite stock?
My favorite stock?
Yeah.
Well, I really don't have any. I invest primarily in mutual funds and
okay.
gold and stuff
all right.
like
well,
that.
Let's throw out
a company, Ford Motor Company, because my dad worked for them all his life.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's a pretty steady stock, though, and generally it doesn't go up or down very much.
Well,
I
don't know. It's been going down. It's been going south lately.
Yeah, you don't need to be a remote viewer to figure that one out, right?
He's seen his fortunes wane, let me tell you.
Yeah, it's really kind of sad to see how that's happening. And I think part of it is because they're having a hard time really recognizing what people need and what they want in terms of vehicles.
Yeah.
But we don't go there. Let's pick another one, which I have a history with, America Online. Okay, let me tell you a story about America Online. After I was out of the remote viewing program, after I'd come back from Desert Storm, I was at an office down in Defense Intelligence Agency down in the D.C. area, and my cubicle mate, a guy named Jordan, his son was a techie in this brand-new startup company dealing with the Internet called AOL, America Online, right? This is like 92.
I love it. Okay.
This guy talked me into getting 1,000 shares in a brokerage account of America Online.
How much did that cost you? You remember?
It was in about $17 a share, right?
Okay. Well, that's pretty high then. Okay.
Well, wait till you hear what happened.
Yeah.
Well, then it went up and it looked pretty cool. Then it went back, and so I risked something. I went on margin, which is where you borrow against the shares you already have, and I got 2,000 shares. But what that means is, if they go down, you lose twice as much money twice as fast, right?
Exactly.
So I'm hitting here sweating bullets. I should have been paying attention to defense issues, and I was worrying about the stock account. And the worst thing was, see, my wife didn't know it, and she hated being on margin. She hated that. And so
she's conservative.
Yeah, she was. And I'm playing with our money, right? So I'm sweating like crazy, and finally it goes down, it goes up, it goes down, it goes up. Finally went up, and I sold it, and I made, I think, $4,000, which is a pretty tidy sum back then, right?
Sure, sure.
I made $4,000 off of it, which our broker went up and then lost for us within a couple weeks after that on a flyer. She didn't believe in AOL, but she believed in something else was even worse. But I figured it out. If I had kept that AOL, it split, I think, 9 or 10 times since then, and it was trading at the point. At one point, we would have had $250 million if I hadn't sold it.
For $1,000, $17,000 investment?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So that just shows you how psychic I was about that, doesn't it? But see, again, that's a lesson, because I knew what was going on, and I was emotionally involved, because if we lost money, I was going to get killed by my wife, right? And when we were making money, I was getting all excited, right? It's a clear case of where emotions get involved, they're going to mesh up even when you're not being psychic. Although I could have been psychic. In fact, I think I did have that intuition. I felt like I ought to keep it, but the depression was too much. You know, the temptation to take that short-term profit. Okay, so we'll use AOL because it was very volatile, all right?
Okay.
So what happens is, if you just consciously tell a remote viewer, okay, I want you to remote view whether AOL is going to be up or down tomorrow, so we know whether we want to sell it or buy it or whatever your position is, right? The remote viewer, no matter how good he is going to end up not much better than 50-50 probably, because a conscious an attempt to consciously remote view a specific thing like that usually leads to so much noise that you just end up no better than guessing anyway. So the question is, how do you deal with that and use remote viewing to and bypass that normal human psychological issue that acts as a roadblock? Well, this is very ingenious. It was kind of different people claim to have invented ARV. Russell Targ thinks he did. Hal Putoff thought he did. Stephen Schwartz thought he did. Dale Graff thought he did. It looks to me like they all sort of came to the same idea, but they were all working together back then anyway. So it was kind of a community effort, really. Okay. Anyway, the idea is you get the remote viewer not to remote view the fact you're trying to find out. You're not the remote viewer isn't going to try and remote view whether the stock is up or down. What you do is you associate something with each of those outcomes. So what that means is, if America Online is going to close up the next day, then you say, okay, I'm going to use this hamburger to symbolize closing up. And if America Online is going to close down tomorrow, then I'm going to use this pencil to symbolize it closes down. Okay. Now, you don't tell the viewer what these two choices are. You don't tell the viewer which one stands. They don't know what any of the targets are. And what you do is get the viewer to tell you what object, to describe an object that they're going to be handed the following day after the stock closes. And so the viewer, not knowing what the targets are or anything, just says, well, what am I going to be handed day after tomorrow? Well, I get the impression that it's kind of round and spongy and squishy and it smells kind of warm and toasty. Well, that doesn't sound like a pencil, does it?
No.
The person who's running this project is going to say, oh, that sounds like the hamburger. That must mean AOL is going to close up tomorrow. And let's assume that everybody's right on this, and AOL does close up. Well, then what you're going to do, you've got to hand that viewer the hamburger after the market closes. But in the meantime, you can have executed your sale or your buy order or whatever it is you want to do, because you've got now information, in a sense, you can think of it this way, back from the future – in a way that doesn't cause the conscious mind of the viewer to mess things up, so that you can make a correct financial decision 70% of the time.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No. And it works. It's worked over and over and over again. Now, it gets more complicated than I'm letting on here, because there are some things that get in its way too, which we're trying to sort out technically. But done properly, in general, you can be right 70% of the time.
I'm still kicking yourself over the AOL stock.
Yeah, that was really stupid, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. That happens.
Yeah, it does, yep.
I did the same thing once when I was 35 years old. I took almost my whole life savings, put them into a emerging St. Louis pharmaceutical company at $5 a share. Mm-hmm. I thought I was a king. and it went up about 3 or 4 points, so I dumped out. The thing split 3 times, ended up at $20 a share after 3 splits.
Oh, man.
I would have been worth millions just
well, you know,
on
we
that
need,
deal.
We need to start a club.
Yeah.
The Dumb Investor Club.
Yeah, exactly. And have people invest the way we don't.
That's right. Hey, there you go. Yeah, there might be something to that.
I want to talk about
intuition.
I want to talk about dowsing when we come back after the break, Paul. But overall, just tell me what beyond this conference, what have you been doing these days? What are the old boys of remote viewing been up to?
Well, for the most part, it's been kind of business as usual, as far as I can tell. You know, everybody got their little training programs and stuff, me included, and not too much exciting that. Except for the interest that's growing. Now, I'm kind of branching out towards the UK a little bit. I've made contact with some folks over there who are interested in the field and want to bring more attention to the United Kingdom, because there's a lot of people over there. Now, the dowsing is part of it. Dowsing is much more interesting. It seems much more there is much more interest in dowsing, it seems, in the UK per capita than there is in the United States. So that got their attention, but I'm going to go over and teach a remote viewing class to a few folks over there, and then I'm also going to give a presentation at the Scottish Society for Psychical Research in Glasgow. This is all this coming May, and that, I think, may open the way for a bit more of a reverse British invasion, if you will, trying to get a little more interest in there. And I was over there in 2006 with the Living the Field conference, doing a weekend presentation on remote viewing, a workshop, and that was quite successful. And so I'm going to see what we can do over there, because those folks kind of been deprived. You know, the real happening place for remote viewing is the United States, and I think there's some interest over there. So,
well, it is. It could be pretty darn dramatic. Hey, Paul, how's Ingo doing? Have you talked to him in a while?
You know, I owe him a phone call. I talked to him before Christmas, and he actually was doing pretty good. He'd gone through a bit of a down, you know, not physical or anything, but, you know, kind of trying to sort out what he's doing. And I talked to him, though, and he was feeling pretty chipper at the time. And but I haven't touched base with him since then, so I'm in ego deficit, if you will.
Well, do me a favor. If you do talk to him, and now that he may be in this upswing, see if he wants to do a program with us.
See if I can get him on your show.
Yeah, He turned us down when he was on that downswing, and
yeah.
You know, maybe if he's back on top, it'll work out.
I'm perfectly happy to bring it up with him again. I have to tell you, though, I think he's going to tell me what he keeps telling me. I'm retired from all that stuff, but
him,
I'll give it a try. I'll give
tell
it a
him down. Tell him this is the what do you call it when you're aunt? Who am I to my aunt? I am what?
Nephew.
My nephew, all right.
Yeah.
Just tell him it's Shafika's nephew.
Put it that way. I'll put it to him that way, yeah.
Yep. He'll do it based on that.
Do it for Shafika.
Yeah. You got to remind him.
That's right.
And you got to do that. What's your website, sir?
It's, of course, the 3Ws, rviewer.com. That's rviewer.com. And by the way, grand announcement on your show. It's a completely newly redesigned website just put up today.
Excellent.
It's a much nicer, much more attractive, and much more easily managed website than my old one was. And
you mean we don't have to remote view our way through it, huh?
You know, you don't. And I didn't realize how bad the old one was until I saw the new one.
All right. Stay with us, Paul Smith. Dowsing next on Coast to Coast AM.